Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Bob, you'll get a real sense of the hatred that makes football so great.
I've got the fever, gambling fever.
What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome in, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig with Corey LeBounty joining from a remote location tonight. Corey, you there?
Yes, sir, Dalton. Always a pleasure to join you each and every Monday night. And there's plenty to talk about tonight from a football aspect for sure.
Yeah, we got a lot to get to. Of course, a full slate of games on Friday night, Saturday, and then the first week of NFL games yesterday, followed by two Monday night games tonight with the Saints opening their season at home against Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans here. Should be kicking off in just a few minutes. And then following that, the team that, well, no one was talking about this offseason because there was completely zero drama, the Oakland Raiders hosting the Denver Broncos tonight. And, of course, I say that in jest because just over the course of one weekend, on actually one day, Saturday, more drama involving Antonio Brown and the Oakland Raiders than most NFL teams deal with in an entire season. But we'll get to that in tonight's show a little bit later on. A lot of college football to get to, Corey, and the top 25 rankings came out yesterday, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but after the LSU win over Texas on Saturday night, now three SEC teams ranked in the top four and a total of five SEC teams in the top 10. And why don't we start at the top? It's as good a place as any to start with the Clemson Tigers. They retained the top spot. It's been 3 weeks in a row now. Longer than that, actually, if you take it back to last season. But they beat 12th-ranked Texas A&M 24-10 on Saturday night. The Aggies, they dropped to number 16 following the loss. But the Clemson Tigers, although they weren't overwhelming, Corey, they looked pretty good on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the job that Dabo Swinney's doing, Dalton, and hats off to them. Clemson will be at Syracuse, who came off an absolute throttling against Maryland. I thought that was a basketball score for a while there. But Clemson's toughest game last year was probably against Syracuse. So Syracuse is expected probably to go ahead and get beat by three-plus touchdowns. But Clemson trying to go start to finish 1-1 from the beginning of the year all the way to the end of the year, ranked number one.
And it's surprising to me, but the number one quarterback in the nation, according to a whole lot of critics, a whole lot of scouts, Trevor Lawrence, he's looking pretty pedestrian so far this year.
Yeah, I think he's due for that big breakout game. I mean, he's been very efficient in playing under center this year, Dalton. But I think that when you look at his numbers at the end of the year, I think he'll be definitely a top 10 candidate for the Heisman.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll bounce back, and a great chance to bounce back this weekend with Syracuse. Alabama, they remain ranked second after beating New Mexico State 62-10, but it was Tide wide receiver Jerry Jeudy who I thought had the best day. He was the best player on the field, 103 yards receiving and three touchdowns in the win. And coming up, probably here in this next segment, Corey, I've got Jerry Jeudy on my list of Heisman contenders, and I'm going to lay out why I think it is possible that Jerry Jeudy could win the Heisman at the end of this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's already a Biletnikoff Award winner, and you know he's looking at that big-time payday next year in the NFL because just the ability and the type of speed in the hands that Jerry Jeudy has, Dalton, I can see why you would put him in the discussion for a Heisman candidate.
He's just so quick and able to make so many of those little nifty jukes and get out in the open. Georgia, they remain ranked third after beating Cupcake Murray State 63-17. Then the big game, LSU, they moved from sixth in the rankings up to number four after that big 45-38 win on the road against the number nine ranked Texas Longhorns. Tigers quarterback Joe Burrow, he was the star of the night, 471 yards passing and four touchdowns. So LSU jumps two spots. On the other side, Texas fell to number 12 with the loss. But I thought Texas, they looked good on Saturday night. LSU just looked like they were a different class.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the LSU's ability offensively to get better. And I know that there's been in this war of words with Alabama fans about who is truly DBU. Mm. But when you give up that many points, Dalton, even though LSU found a way to win it, it's ultimately setting up for the past 7 or 8 years that big time Saturday night primetime matchup that they normally wind up having, either the 2:30 CBS game or that 7 o'clock kickoff. So again, it looks like it's going to be a top 10 matchup in the beginning of November between Alabama and LSU.
Yeah, top four as it stands right now. And, you know, before the season started, I kind of made some interesting, I would say interesting picks, because I didn't go with the Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State for the Final Four in the playoff. I've got LSU. I do have Clemson in there because ACC is so weak. But I had LSU beating Texas here in this Week 2 game, just like they did on Saturday night. But I've got Texas. They still look good to me. I've got them coming back in the playoff and potentially meeting LSU again at the end of the year. But Texas, they left some points out there on the field. I mean, just look at the first quarter. Keontae Ingram had a pass land right in his hands in the end zone. They showed a shot of, I guess it was Sam Ellinger's mom and sister or maybe girlfriend, and they were cheering like Ingram had caught the pass. Of course, we all know how that ended up. He dropped that. I think that was one of two times there where Texas got all the way down to the 1 yard line, were unable to put the ball in, and then missing on the onside kick at the very end of the game. They came so close to grabbing that, but still, props to Ed Orgeron. Joe Burrow looked really good out there. And now that stat, it's glaring. With Alabama on the horizon in November, LSU under Ed Orgeron, 6-0 against top 25 ranked teams that are not Alabama. But Nick Saban against Ed Orgeron and LSU, currently 3-0. And I think LSU averages 3 points a game when they play Alabama. So looking forward to that game. Moving on a little bit further down the list, Oklahoma, they're still ranked. Well, they fell one because LSU moved up. But Oklahoma's ranked 5th after they routed South Dakota. Ohio State comes in at number 6. Cincinnati was absolutely nothing for them. But Justin Fields, the transfer from Georgia, he's on a lot of people's Heisman lists, and he looks pretty good so far this season, Corey.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I'm looking at a situation with Oklahoma, Dalton, and I think they're the team that intrigues everybody just because of the dynamic that Jalen Hurts has brought to a Big 12 team that does not have great defenses. But that's back-to-back weeks that Jalen Hurts has been solid. And, you know, you have them playing at UCLA, which is a lot of things are going wrong for the West Coast team, UCLA Bruins, at this point in time, because they had one of the hottest coaches that they hired a couple years ago, and he's on the hot seat already with the Bruins. So that's going to be an interesting matchup for the Sooners coming up.
Yeah, what a fall from grace for Chip Kelly after leading Oregon and being one of the most brilliant minds in the game heading to the NFL. And we know what happened with the Philadelphia Eagles and him trying to revolutionize the pro game. That didn't work out. Thought he would work out at UCLA, and it sure isn't looking like it now. Notre Dame, they dropped one spot to number 7 after a bye week for them. They've got New Mexico coming up, and then a big one. They're playing in Athens against the Georgia Bulldogs in 2 weekends, so that ought to be a good game. But Notre Dame was off this weekend. Auburn, they're now up. They jumped 2 spots to number 8 after beating a pesky Tulane team on Saturday, 24-6. The score doesn't look that good because most people are used to Tulane being a pushover, one of those cupcake schools like Murray State, but not the case this year. Tulane, a pretty good team. Auburn, they didn't look their greatest against them, but I thought they put up a good effort on Saturday.
Yeah, you don't have to look your best. All that you have to do is come away with the win. And I think one of the biggest things for Auburn was trying to come away healthy. Will Herring took that shot that was called for targeting. So to my knowledge, that's the only injury that the Auburn Tigers are fighting right now. But, you know, they have Kent State this week, so that matchup will be pretty easy, and it's supposed to be a nice point spread for the Auburn Tigers.
Yeah, and actually Auburn, they had a couple injuries there. The receiver went down on his shoulder. Did you say Will Hastings? Is that who you said?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
My bad. You are right on that, Corey. Just like always, you're always right. let's see here. Florida, number 9, they shut out UT Martin 45-0. They've got their SEC opener coming up against Kentucky, which I think that'll be an interesting game this Saturday. And then at number 10 on the list, Michigan. They dropped 3 spots after just squeaking past Army 24-21 in double overtime. Army almost did it to Oklahoma last season. They almost did it to Michigan this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation again, Dalton. Going back and looking at Jim Harbaugh, I have them in the Final Four, making the college football semifinals. Mm-hmm. But this is a game where I think they got caught playing peekaboo, looking ahead a little bit and looking over Army. And Army had every opportunity to try to win that football game. But at the end of the day, the Michigan Wolverines find a way to survive in advance and are still unblemished.
So there you have it. Five SEC teams in the top 10. Texas A&M rounds them out at number 16, which leaves us with six SEC teams there in the top 25. And as far as our big contest here at FM Talk 106.5, I know that most people are worried about this more than they are the actual scores of the games on Saturday, but the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge, it was the Alabama Outlaw with the best week of anyone. He got 8 out of 10 correct. The only two games that he missed this week, and he made the biggest move. He's not in first place, but he missed the Michigan game. He actually picked Army to win that, so that would have been a huge upset win there. And then Colorado upsetting Nebraska, which I did not see coming. I know that a few people called that one. So congratulations to Alabama Outlaw. He had the best week of anyone in our little FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Challenge. But Fuller Bull is the one to chase right now. He's in first place alone with 15 total points. And then watch out right behind him, my entry, Beach House Bobby, second place, 1 point behind the leader. Corey, where are you at right now? Do you know?
I'm probably, yes. I'm in 68th place. I had a rough week. I had 4 out of 10 winners this past week. And I tell you what, the Tennessee Volunteers didn't do me any favors this week. But that's okay. I don't think they did a lot of people favors. As they were favored to beat BYU and just weren't able to do it. But it's just rough, Dalton. I mean, I think things are going to get better here in week number 3 for me.
Yeah. Hey, I'll give my take on Tennessee when we get back on the other side of the break. I'm not happy. I'll just tell you that. I'm not happy with Tennessee right now, but I do think brighter days are ahead. We're coming back. More Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty with you on this Monday Night Football Monday night with a doubleheader of Monday night games as NFL Week 1 rolls along. We're in September and there's football just about every single night of the week. And Corey, I couldn't be happier. I don't know about you.
I agree. I mean, you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, 5 days of consecutive football, whether it's high school, collegiate, or NFL, but you have to love it, Dalton.
I sure do. What game did you check out this weekend? Send us a text, 343-0106, or call us, 251-343-0106. Who do you think may have been overrated to begin the year? Maybe some of those underrated teams out there that are looking good 2 weeks into the season. Corey, earlier when you mentioned Will Hastings' injury, I was thinking Seth Williams. He went down on his shoulder. Of course, the I guess part of the heroic effort against Oregon that first weekend with Bo Nix hitting Seth Williams for the game winner, but Williams went down with a shoulder injury against Tulane. I guess he only had the one catch in the game before going down. Gus Malzahn seems to think it's day-to-day, so they shouldn't be without him for too much longer. There were a few other injuries in the SEC this weekend, and one, a very, very big injury for Kentucky, losing their starting quarterback Terry Wilson for the entire year. One of those horse collar tackles, and we know how dangerous those could be. I mean, it's the entire reason that they've outlawed him, made him a 15-yard penalty. But Mark Stoops yesterday said Terry Wilson out for the rest of the season, a torn patellar tendon in his left knee. It was during a horse collar tackle in the second half. Kentucky, they played Eastern Michigan on Saturday, 38-17 win for the Wildcats. But that means, and with Florida coming up on deck, that the quarterback now will be a junior transfer from Troy University, Sawyer Smith, who he played quite a bit for Troy last year, but he actually started, I think, the final 7 games of the year, transferred to Kentucky in July, and now he's going to take the reins of a team that went 10-3 last year, and so far this season they're undefeated, so a good chance this weekend against Florida, and a former Troy quarterback will have the reins of the offense. Also, Jake Bentley, we knew that he was going to be out for South Carolina for at least a couple weeks. But now Will Muschamp yesterday saying that Bentley will be out for the rest of the year after undergoing season-ending surgery on his fractured left foot, which he fractured during South Carolina's 24-20 loss to North Carolina. So that brings freshman quarterback Ryan Helinski, who, if the name sounds familiar, as his brother was the, I think, Washington State. He was the Washington State quarterback that unfortunately died from suicide just a couple years ago. And Ryan Helinski, his younger brother, who was also a pretty highly touted recruit, ends up at South Carolina. He threw for 3 touchdowns against Charleston Southern Saturday. But Charleston Southern, a far cry from the team that they're facing this weekend, Corey, as the Gamecocks host number 2 ranked Alabama. What, you know what it's like when Alabama goes up against a freshman quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like that fresh meat syndrome that they have. And it's a situation to where Nick Saban and the guys, he's going to remind them of that 2010 game in which Alabama was coming off a national championship and sputtered, I think, to 3 losses in the 2010 season. So even though those guys who are currently on Alabama's roster were probably in elementary school at the time, Nick Saban's not going to let those guys forget how important each and every game is, especially when you go and play at South Carolina.
We've got to talk about probably the most disappointing, one of the most disappointing teams in the entire nation, and I hate it because it's a team that, you know, I've cared for a long time, the Tennessee Volunteers, who, after inexplicably losing to one of the worst Sun Belt teams in week one, Georgia State, Tennessee was a 26-point favorite in that game and ended up losing outright to Georgia State 38-30. And honestly, it wasn't even that close. Tennessee in week one scored a garbage time touchdown. But then they come back, and sure, BYU supposed to be a little bit of a tougher opponent than Georgia State, at least on paper. And they're coming to Knoxville to play in Neyland Stadium. I was expecting Tennessee to bounce back. They looked 100% better on the film. They looked 100% better on camera. But still, when it comes to the end of the game, in Tennessee, according to ESPN, whatever their predictors called there, ESPN had them with a 99.6% chance to win. They're up by 3 with, I think, 12 seconds to play. A completely blown coverage from the cornerback, I think Jackson's his name, number 2. Just completely, I don't know what he was thinking, but the BYU quarterback throws it a perfect strike to a wide-open receiver, nearly scores a touchdown and wins outright, but leaves BYU's kicker with a chip shot. He knocks that in. They go to overtime, and then Tennessee was just toast from there. And now 0-2 for the first time since 1988. 31 years since Tennessee started the year 0-2, and it's not like they opened the season with Clemson and Alabama, Corey. Georgia State and BYU, before I give my take, what's your take on that train wreck in Knoxville right now?
I just think it's a situation to where Tennessee players have to learn from their mistakes, and I think the biggest improvement that you want to see is from week one of football to week two of football, but I think this Tennessee team continued to make the same mistakes that they made against Georgia Southern, and you would think that they would come out absolutely hungry and on fire. They jumped up early. It was 13-3 at halftime, and you're looking at a situation where you had to feel pretty good if you're a Tennessee Volunteer fan. And then at the end, like you said, just inexcusable to give up the type of yardage that Tennessee did for the latter part of that game to give BYU an opportunity to tie that game and send it into overtime.
You know, I've always heard, and you've probably heard it a lot too, Corey, you've been around football for so long, but you could really tell who has the coaching advantage by what happens after halftime. That's usually when coaching matters more than anything. And so far, the second half, it just has not gone Tennessee's way. I don't know if it's gone Tennessee's way since Jeremy Pruitt came to town. I thought he was going to be the big-time difference maker, but he sure looks out of his depth right now. I know week one against Georgia State, it was almost, he was so emotionless, I thought that he was saying, okay, you guys do it your way this week, and we'll see how that works out for you, and then next week I'll take over. He showed a little bit more fire against BYU, but still unable to get it done, just some inexcusable errors. And, you know, we were talking about it with a couple people this weekend, Corey, and could we see Philip Fulmer, if Tennessee happens to lose this, well, they're 26-point favorites again going in this week against Chattanooga. I don't think they lose that one, but hey, I've been wrong the last 2 weeks in a row. If they lose to that, to them, or if they go 1-11 the rest of the year, could we be looking at Philip Fulmer coaching again in Knoxville?
If you lose to Chattanooga, absolutely you will have Philip Fulmer walking the sidelines at Neyland Stadium. I know that there's a $10 million buyout that they owe to Jeremy Pruitt, but you cannot afford to lose to the Moccasins of Chattanooga. And then you turn around right after that. If you're able to get your first win, Tennessee travels to Florida. So it doesn't get any easier for the Tennessee Volunteers if they're able to secure that first win. But hopefully this week it'll give them a little bit of momentum and some positive aspects going into that Florida game in week number four of college football.
Now, I'll probably come out of this looking silly, but I really do not think that there's just too much talent on that sideline for them to be this bad. I think at some point they do finally turn it around. I don't think they've got to win at least four games this year. I know they still have Chattanooga coming up. They've got UAB on the schedule, a couple other very winnable games. But Jeremy Pruitt, man, what a way to earn your seat in the hot seat. He has gone there in a hurry. When we get back from the break, Corey, I want to kind of go in a little bit more in depth on the Auburn-Tulane game. Also, the final home opener for the South Alabama Jaguars. They played Jackson State on Saturday night. A big day for Trey Minner. Really a big day for the entire rushing team for South Alabama. 413 yards rushing. That's a new school record. But a big game coming up for South Alabama this weekend. A team that beat the brakes off of them last year in Memphis. They're playing Memphis here in Mobile this coming Saturday. We'll talk about that game. Also, why I think Jerry Jeudy should be in the Heisman mix, why he should be the first receiver to win the Heisman in a long, long time. Only two before have won. I'll tell you who those two receivers are when we get back. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. We're coming right back.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106. You ain't
got no... Here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you. Just like we are every Monday night, 6 p.m. following the Paul Feinbaum Show. Now, normally, we lead into Monday Night Football. But the NFL, they knew we were on, so they wanted to go ahead and jump it and went ahead and started tonight's game at 6:10. And Drew Brees, well, if you've recorded the game, I'll give you 2 seconds to go ahead and turn me down for half a second. Drew Brees throws an interception in the red zone. Houston gets the ball back as the first quarter starts to come to an end. But plenty of NFL football to talk about if we get to that time here later in the hour. But, Corey, I do want to go a little more in depth on the Auburn Tigers this week. They had Tulane. Tulane actually only a 17-point underdog going into the game, which was surprising for a lot of people that don't pay attention to smaller schools like that. But they've actually kind of turned the program around here in the last couple of years. You could tell they were game, at least for the first half, against Auburn. But by the end of the game, that Auburn depth had taken a toll on the green wave. And it also seemed like Auburn's offense kind of had maybe a hangover from the Oregon game in the first quarter. Just did not look like what Gus Malzahn wants them to look. Bo Nix, he did what is important for your, especially young quarterbacks, but when you're playing teams that have a good chance to upset you, the main thing is to take care of the ball on offense. Bo Nix did his part. He went 19 of 37, which is not a great stat line, only 207 yards and a touchdown. But the most important thing, he did not throw any interceptions on Saturday. Boobie Whitlow, on the other hand, the starting running back, he finished with over 100 yards and a touchdown, but put the ball on the ground 3 times and lost it twice. The defense, Corey, I think that when we look back at this year, we'll say 2 things, and of course there's a whole lot of year to go, and Auburn, they could end up undefeated at the end of the year in the new 2020 college football champions, or they could go 7-5 and go to a bowl game and maybe the Music City Bowl or something like that. But at the end of the year, either way, I think we look back at this as a year that was all about the defense and all about the freshman quarterback getting his legs underneath him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the thing about Auburn, though, they have to establish that rushing game. You mentioned Boobie Whitlow putting the ball on the turf 3 times. That's something that I know has to be cleaned up for the Auburn Tigers. But anytime they have a 100-yard rusher, it's normally good signs that great things are going to happen. I know Joey Gatewood came into the game, and he just extends plays, and he has that Cam Newton type of stride to once he gets outside the pocket, he's able to extend plays. So, Bo Nix, he can run when necessary. Gatewood, definitely, to me, doesn't go through all his progressions, but he's so fast that he really doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. But that's the biggest concern. You look at Auburn's opponent next week, you're talking about Kent State and then Texas A&M playing Lamar, two teams that both of these opponents that are going to play each other in week five should have a rest-up game and just want to come out of week four healthy and ready for conference play.
Yeah, Kent State, a totally different animal than even Tulane. We're talking about a team that went 2-10 last year with wins over Howard and Bowling Green. They did beat Kennesaw State this last Saturday in overtime, so halfway to last year's win total. But 0-14 Kent State all-time against SEC teams. Last year, they actually played Ole Miss close for a half before Ole Miss took off on them in the second half. But a familiar name in the backfield there at Kent State, former Auburn redshirt quarterback Woody Barrett. He's the starter there after he transferred from Auburn 2 years ago. Might remember he had a pretty big name coming into Auburn, redshirted, did not earn the starting job. I can't remember if that was when Sean White took the job or who it was, but Woody Barrett ended up leaving Auburn then, and now, what do you know, he's the quarterback at Kent State. They do have some experience on offense with 9 returning starters, but if this Auburn offense can't figure out the Kent State defense, they could be in trouble the rest of the year. Golden Flashes have allowed 35 points per game the past 2 seasons and only returned 6 starters this year. So Auburn, yeah, I'm looking for him to have a tune-up game before leading into that huge game. At least for Auburn, it's a huge game against Texas A&M in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn's favored by 35 points against Kent State. And again, you just want to have some type of positive momentum going into your next game. You want to be trying to be clicking on all cylinders as you open up conference play. And that's for A&M as well, as they suffered that loss to Clemson, scored a touchdown late. But again, I just think that Auburn has to establish the running game and has to find a way to be able to rush the football in order to open up this Gus Malzahn offense.
The South Alabama Jaguars were at home for the first time this year. They played Jackson State on Saturday night, 37-14 win for South. And just like Auburn kind of looked like they had a hangover from the Oregon game, South looked like they might have been a little hungover from that close call at Nebraska in week one. But when you need points, when you need to, you know, avoid the upset following a big near win or a big upset victory, it all comes down to the running game. And Trey Minter, who ended last year on a really high note against Charleston Southern, had another big game against Jackson State. He ended up 16 carries, 189 yards, and 2 touchdowns. That's an average of 11.8 per carry. But it wasn't just him, Corey. A lot of people got involved. A school record 413 yards rushing for South. I do know it's Jackson State, but that's got to be a relief for Steve Campbell to see his team, first to see his O-line get out there and block like that, but also the running backs take advantage of those holes.
Without question, Jared Wilson came in as a freshman out of Troy, Alabama, and ran the ball extremely hard. He had defenders bouncing off of him like a bowling ball hitting the pin. And it was fun to watch South Alabama establish the rushing game, Dawson. One of the things that I saw that I have not seen in probably over 10 years of watching college football is the number of ejections. And there was not a huge mass fight. There were back-to-back targeting ejections that were called against South Alabama. And that was something that you normally don't see as far as back-to-back plays. Later on in the game, another Jackson State player threw a punch and he was ejected. And South Alabama, as a matter of fact, I want to say had 3 total players ejected for targeting in that game. So that's something that I know Coach Campbell definitely wants to clean up as the Memphis Tigers come to South Alabama at Ladd Stadium Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and that's not going to help with Memphis coming to town if those players are out for the first half of the game. You know, and I also want to know, it was my question after the Nebraska game, it's my question now, where are the wideouts? What's going on? I'm not seeing anybody help Cephas Johnson out. And Cephas, to be fair, he didn't have a great day on Saturday either. He went 11 of 18 for 120 yards, put the ball in the other team's arms once again, just like he did against Nebraska, threw 2 interceptions on Saturday night with only 1 touchdown. But to me, he's not getting any help from the receiving corps. Kwon Baker had 2 receptions for a team-high 41 yards. Behind that, you've got Trey Minter, who had a great day in the backfield, four receptions, 33 yards. And then after that, I mean, a lot of one catch, Jalen Tolbert, one catch, Cade Sutherland, one catch, Brandon Crum, one catch, Jamel Thomas. Davin Flanord got two catches, but only 15 yards there. In order to beat a team like Memphis and in order to be competitive here in the Sun Belt, they need some help out there at wideout.
Yeah, you're going to have to control the line of scrimmage, give Cephas an opportunity to go through his reads, and Cephas is going to continue to do that. I know a couple of them were jump ball situations to where it was either defender or the wide receiver that were going to be able to come down with the football. But if you leave your wide receiver long enough and put it in the only place that anybody can catch it is your wide receiver, that's the biggest thing that I know Cephas is going to continue to work on this week, like you mentioned, for South Alabama to have an opportunity to defeat Memphis. They are going to have to distribute the football, and they're going to have, I would say, at least 175 rushing yards and 175 yards receiving.
And there's room there for South Alabama to run the ball. Memphis not the best against the run. Of course, they did play Memphis last year. It was in Memphis and lost 52-35. And the Tigers this year already have beaten a bad Ole Miss team 15-10. And then they had Southern 55-24 on Saturday, which I kind of think it's funny. They played Southern University Saturday. Now they're playing South Alabama. Both teams, the Jaguars, and they get – I've heard so many people confuse the two schools, Southern University and South Alabama. But that's how Memphis' schedule lined up. So they beat Southern 55-24. Now they've got South again. And if you're thinking of Memphis from last year, this is a bit of a difference. Team. They've got the same quarterback, Brady White, but lost their two top players on offense, running back Darrell Henderson, who's now in the NFL, and wide receiver Tony Pollard. Plus, they lost three starting O-linemen. They do have a mediocre defense, but they returned eight starters. But that team allowed 32 points per game last season. So there should be some opportunity for South. We'll see. Trey Minter's going to have another huge game to have a shot in this one. But like you said, Corey, the receivers, they need to show up. And Cephas, he can't be giving the ball back to Memphis because they'll put it in the other end zone.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest thing for Cephas and for South Alabama to control the turnover battle. And you look at the penalty situation as well. I think that's something that Coach Campbell really wants to emphasize. South Alabama penalized 11 times for 101 yards. That's something that you cannot give away free yardage to the Memphis Tigers next week.
And by the way, if you're the gambling type, if you like to throw a little bit on it and have a little bit of action riding on it, maybe going to Biloxi this weekend, South 18.5-point underdogs at home to a team that they only lost by 17 to last year in Memphis. And I would say this is an improved South Alabama team over last year's team and a worse Memphis team than last year's team. So take a good look at that one. 18.5-point underdogs I think is kind of ridiculous. Hey, when we get back, I'll give you my current Heisman top five. I want to see what Corey has to say about those, why I think Jerry Jeudy should be in the mix if he continues doing what he's doing. Also, a couple words about the NFL as they got Week 1 started yesterday. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty. We're coming right back.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names, you're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back as we wrap up Sports Night here on FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Corey Labounty with you as football has entered. Well, everybody's going full speed now. A doubleheader of Monday Night Football games tonight. Still scoreless in New Orleans as we speak. You know, Corey, now not the time to crown a Heisman winner for this season, but it is a good time to come out with a very early list of who's been most impressive so far this season. Two names that will probably be at the top at the end of the year are not currently in my top three, and that would be Trevor Lawrence, the Clemson quarterback, who hasn't had to do much these first 2 weeks, but still, after throwing only four interceptions last year, he's already thrown three so far this season. I don't think he's thrown for over 300 yards yet. Just hasn't had to do much. I'm sure he'll work his way into the conversation. But as we speak right now, Corey, my top five in the Heisman go to Joe Burrow, who, thanks to that incredible game he had on Saturday night against Texas, he's my number one right now. Travis Etienne, who lines up behind Trevor Lawrence, the running back there at Clemson, he had a huge game against Georgia Tech, and while he didn't have as big a game against Texas A&M, he was still pretty instrumental in Clemson's win over a top 25-ranked team. I've got Jalen Hurts currently as my number three vote, only because Oklahoma hasn't played anybody yet, but Jalen easily has the most impressive stat line in the entire nation. And then right behind him, ahead of Tua Tagovailoa, who I have in my number five spot right now because he's got some pretty good-looking stats if you look at the paper, I've got Jerry Jeudy right now, number four on my Heisman list. And if you just look at Tua's stats, Tua right now, two games into the year, 42 of 55, 563 yards passing and seven touchdowns. Jerry Jeudy right now has 18 of those 42 catches. That's 42% of all the balls that Tua's thrown. Jeudy has 240 of the 563 yards receiving, which is 43% of what Tua's done. And he's also caught four of those seven touchdowns, which if you're good at math and I'm not, I had to break out the calculator. 57% of Tua's touchdowns have gone to Jerry Jeudy. So why not? Why is Jerry Jeudy not in the conversation? Corey, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go with Travis Etienne as well. I also definitely have Tua as a Heisman favorite, as well as Jalen Hurts continuing to get it done. You know, one of those people that I put in there is Wisconsin running back Jonathan Taylor. Mm-hmm. And the last one is Justin Fields for Ohio State for myself, the quarterback. Just doing a great job so far, throwing for 458 passing yards and has six passing touchdowns on the season with no interceptions. So that's going to be my Heisman favorite so far through a couple of weeks of college football.
Yeah, I was looking back at the receivers who had a chance to win the Heisman. And, of course, there have been two receivers who have ever won the Heisman. Desmond Howard with Michigan, who we see every Saturday morning now. He won it back in 1991, the year that I was born. Desmond Howard won it. And then 4 years before that, Tim Brown over at Notre Dame won it. Those are the only two receivers ever to win the Heisman. Corey, you know who almost, well, I don't know if almost won it, but finished in the top three here in the last 4 years. You know who I'm talking about?
Well, I mean, Amari Cooper's numbers were just ridiculous when he played at Alabama, and I know he was a favorite target of A.J. McCarron, but it would have to be Amari Cooper.
Yeah, you're right. Finished third in 2014 behind Marcus Mariota and Melvin Gordon. And that year, Cooper had 124 catches, 1,727 yards. He averaged 13.9 per catch and had 16 touchdowns, which, to me, that is just such an unbelievable stat line. I can't believe that he didn't get a little bit closer to Marcus's numbers, and Marcus, of course, won the Heisman. But Jeudy last year finished with 68 catches, 1,315 yards, a 19.3 average, and 14 touchdowns. This year, I know they've only played two bad defenses, but he's on pace for 108 catches, 1,440 yards, an average of 13.3. But the big number, 24 touchdowns if he's able to keep it up. And I see that average rising. I see maybe the number of touchdowns dropping, but I think Jerry Jeudy, if they keep winning, if he's still as big a part of the offense as he's been these first 2 weeks, he ought to have a legitimate shot at winning the Heisman.
You know, one of the things that I think that allowed Desmond Howard to be a Heisman Trophy winner was his ability to play special teams, something that you really don't see out of a Biletnikoff award-winning Jerry Jeudy. He has that speed, and his yards after catch are ridiculous, Dalton. And the speed and the burst that he does have, you can see why he's on Mel Kiper Jr.'s big board as the number one overall player.
Yeah, you sure can. Got a big week of SEC games coming up this week. I'll run them down them real quick. 11 a.m. this weekend, Georgia hosts Arkansas State. Georgia, 33-point favorite. Mississippi State hosts Kansas State. And I know there wasn't a line on this for a while, as they waited for the news on Mississippi State's quarterback Tommy Stevens. Morehead did come out at the press conference today and didn't give a whole lot of information. It doesn't seem like Stevens will be out long, but he might not be ready this week. So State now a 6.5-point favorite over Kansas State. After that, also at 11 a.m., Tennessee hosts Chattanooga. The Vols 28-point favorites to get their first win of the year. Alabama playing at South Carolina, the Tide 25.5-point favorites on the road. Any reason at all to worry about this game for Alabama, Corey?
Absolutely not. If you're the Crimson Tide, bottom line is you want to get out of this game healthy. But I think the point spread being at 25 points is right there. Will Muschamp is trying to become the first coach that used to be under Nick Saban to give Coach Saban a loss, but I just don't see that happening this Saturday, Dolph.
That game kicks off at 2:30. At 3 o'clock, Ole Miss hosts Southeastern Louisiana. Also at 3, Arkansas hosts Colorado State. The Hogs, a 10-point favorite. I think Colorado State could give Arkansas a little run for their money there. probably still won't be a very appetizing game to watch, but I could see Colorado State even winning outright against Arkansas. Auburn hosts Kent State. That game kicks off at 6 o'clock. The Tigers, 35-point favorites. And then a pretty big SEC matchup. I know a lot of people, they didn't expect much out of Kentucky last year, and the Wildcats went 10-3. And then this year, again, not many people expecting a lot out of Kentucky, but they'll host the number 9 ranked Florida Gators at 6 on Saturday. Florida right now, 8-point favorites in this game. But the news from this weekend, Kadarius Toney injured his arm in the win over UT Martin. Looks like he is going to be out this weekend against Kentucky. And like the news I mentioned earlier, Terry Wilson out for the season for Kentucky. So that brings the Troy transfer quarterback, Sawyer Smith, in to start for the Wildcats. And we've seen it before, Corey, that even if you lose a more talented quarterback, sometimes just the switch in style, putting somebody out there who there's not a whole lot of game tape on with that new team, that could cause some fits for other teams. I could see Kentucky going out there and actually beating Florida for the second year in a row after losing 33 times in a row.
Yeah, I'm going to be like Lee Corso. Not so fast, my friend. I just think that it's going to be a situation that the Florida Gators are going to be able to handle their business. And, you know, you want to see LaMichael Perine really have a great game. You hate that Kadarius Toney, the Blount alum, is not going to be able to play. But I like the Florida Gators to take care of business and cover that.
Texas A&M, they get a little bit of a layoff after that game against Clemson. They'll play Lamar this weekend and then going into that Auburn game. But A&M, 43.5-point favorites. Same for LSU. They get a week off basically after playing against Texas. They're 56-point favorites as they welcome Northwestern State to town. Missouri, 34-point favorites over Southeast Missouri State. So a lot of cupcakes on the schedule. But the Florida-Kentucky game should be a good one. And also, I guess I'm looking at that Mississippi State, Kansas State is one with some potential. Not a whole lot to watch in the SEC this coming weekend, but the NFL is on, and a couple games that I thought were interesting yesterday. First, you know, everyone was calling the Pittsburgh Steelers underrated this year, and after so many times where people say you're underrated, I guess at some point you become overrated. And the New England Patriots last night had no trouble at all with Big Ben, sans Antonio Brown, no Le'Veon Bell. The Patriots win 33-3 and are looking just like they should be in the mix for the Super Bowl this year, especially when you add Antonio Brown. But, Corey, is he worth the headache?
No, absolutely not. I'm surprised that he had a job afterwards. I did not expect the Patriots to go ahead and pick him up, but they did. And, you know, it's just one of those situations to where the rich get richer. Tom Brady's going to reel him in. Coach Belichick's going to reel him in. And I think he's going to pay dividends for the Patriots.
Also, a shout-out to a guy who's on the team that I follow the most, and a guy I know you've followed throughout his entire career, but Derrick Henry picking up where he left off last season for the Tennessee Titans. Another team that was overhyped this year, the Cleveland Browns, just laid an absolute egg there in Cleveland as they opened the year against Tennessee. The Titans pick off Baker Mayfield three times, return one for a touchdown, also get a safety, and Derrick Henry rumbling 75 yards on a screen for a touchdown. He also ran the ball for 76 more yards. I think he's going to have possibly an MVP-type season. That does it for us on Sports Night. Corey, thank you so much. Hopefully you're back in studio next week, man.
You got it, Dalton. Look forward to it.
All right, that does it for us on Sports Night. Coming up, Sweet Home Canabama.